Last week we began a two-week series looking at 15 psalms, Psalm 120 to 134, and these are psalms that are called songs of ascent. And the reason they're called songs of ascent, most scholars believe, is because they were likely sung by the people of Israel when they would go to their annual feasts at the temple. And so they would leave their everyday, ordinary life, their villages or their places in their city, and they would walk. In fact, they would climb to Jerusalem, because Jerusalem is your archetypical city on a hill. And this is a model that is in Jerusalem today of what Jerusalem looked like at the time of Jesus. And you can see that as you would come to Jerusalem, the space, the look and the feel of the physical space changes. You move from from a village atmosphere or a rural atmosphere into an urban atmosphere, and you get into that urban atmosphere and you've got some residential areas, but you've also got some palaces, some government and administrative buildings, some squares and marketplaces, and you get into the capital city and this change of atmosphere and space. But then even further up on the hill, you've got different space yet again. And you can see the temple there. It's that big square area in sort of the middle right side of the screen. And that space, again, has a different look and a different feel to anything else around it. And so as the people would go on a regular basis, at least three times a year, to the three main feasts, their surroundings would change. They would enter into space that was completely different than their everyday, ordinary life. And they would sing these songs as they went. And so these songs became very formational for them, similar to us when we sing songs at Christmas or at Easter or at summer camp, and we sing them again and again. And then when you hear that melody, it brings back to you all those feelings, all those associations of those special moments in the year, formational times for us in the year. And that's what they experienced. So what we want to do last week and this week was look at those psalms, those songs that they would sing at those times, and imagine ourselves, firstly, at the time of Jesus, maybe going to one of these feasts with Jesus, because he went. And if he went together with his people, they would have sung these songs together. And so how were these songs formational to people then? And then how can they be formational for us now? Because this movement from everyday, ordinary life into different space was a movement from regular life into sacred space, into holy space. And it was space that was very contrasted with what people would experience on an everyday basis. It brought them from, for example, we saw last week, it brought them from experiences of deceit and conflict in their world into space that was all about truth and peace and reconciliation. It brought them from a context where they were aware of the threats around them, the threats of people up in the hills that would be able to attack their vulnerability along the way, brought them from that context into a place where behind those solid stone walls, they felt a tremendous sense of security. It brought them from experience of injustice to a place where seats for judgment and the establishment of justice were set up in this city, and you could come into a place where ultimately in the temple you had symbolic representations of God's justice, God setting all things right. It brought them from a time when they felt very much like they were completely reliant on their own work and what they had to do in order to get ahead in the world or even just survive in the world, to a place where symbolically they were very much reliant on God. They were in this space that was centered on God, that was focused on God, that was all about God. In fact, that sense of the temple, it was almost like a window or a meeting place between heaven and earth for them, and how they viewed things. So this was a place where heaven and earth would come together, and you sense the nearness of God, and that would change your perspective on your everyday life. And so you would go through this, what we call a redemptive movement, moving into a physical space where you would become aware of another reality, and that experience together as you sang these songs would change your mind and change your heart, and you would be changed, and then you would go back out into your everyday life for the next few months or for the next year with that memory and with that change that had happened within you, and you would be, in a sense, extending this sacred space into space that wasn't like that. And so that's the redemptive movement that the people at that time had when they would come and they would go through these, they would participate in these feasts and they would sing these songs. Today, however, the temple is not a physical geographic space, is it? With the death and resurrection of Jesus and the outpouring of the Spirit, God is taking a people and he's forming this people, this community of Jesus followers into sacred space. We read last week in Ephesians chapter 2:19, Paul says, "So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole structure, being joined together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord. In him you also are being built together into a dwelling place for God by the Spirit." So followers of Jesus are being formed into a community that is different than everything else around it. It's sacred space. It's space that is supposed to be safe and secure and vibrant with life and beautiful and a place where people are being restored and reconciled with each other and with God and then formed into a people that can extend that sacred space into all of God's world. And indeed, at the very end of the story in the Bible, we see that heaven and earth come together and the city on a hill, the New Jerusalem, comes down and it is there on earth, and this, and Jesus is right at the center of it, and the glory of God flows out, and it brings transformation and healing to the nations because the tree of life is right there in the city. All wonderful, beautiful symbols that really are based on what we saw here physically in Jerusalem at that time, but now are transformed because of the life and death of Jesus and the outpouring of the Spirit that causes us, makes it possible for us to be a people and a community that live this kind of redemptive movement out in our own lives and offer it to others. So that's the flow of where things are going. And last week we made it through the first eight psalms in the morning and the evening, and we got to Psalm 127, which is a song of Solomon. It's the only one in the whole 15 songs that is called a Song of Solomon. And Solomon, of course, was the builder of the temple. And so there's this sense where the first seven psalms bring you to a central place in the movement of the 15. And that eighth psalm, that central psalm, is a Song of Solomon. Reminds us that this is a movement with the temple, the sacred space at the very center of it. And something happens when we get there. And when we sing these songs together. And so what we want to do today and this evening is walk through this song and then the last seven and consider what it would have been like to sing these songs with Jesus, and then how does that apply to us? How can these be formative for us today in our walk of faith with Jesus and our calling to extend this redemptive movement and this sacred space into the rest of our lives and the rest of the world? So let's read together. I wish we could sing it together, but I don't know what the tune was like back then. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Let's read together this song, 127, and imagine we've been on this journey with Jesus coming to Jerusalem, and then we've entered the city, and we've come up into the courts of the temple, and we've sung these previous songs together, and now we're there with Jesus, and we're singing this song together. 127. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Now, last Sunday evening, we looked at this really briefly, but typically for me, I took far too long in the first part of the talk, and so we had to really rush through this. So I want to dwell on it a little bit more this morning. But before we get into it, I just want to say that the Psalms, they they come from an ancient time. And often when we read the Psalms, it's a little bit jarring because it takes us into a world that isn't necessarily our world. And so one of the ways that I've found it helpful to pray the Psalms is to, and I mentioned this last Sunday evening, is to read a Psalm through and then just sit with it in silence for 2 minutes. Because often there's things in that Psalm that I'm like, whoa, where is that coming from? And I can't relate to that. But just sitting there in silence for 2 minutes and just letting it sit there with me. And for me, just doing that in our hectic life, the way of the lives that we live, just sitting in silence for 2 minutes itself can be a challenge, can't it? But sitting there with it and then reading it again and sitting there for another 2 minutes and just letting myself dwell in that psalm and then reading it a final time and in that final time allowing the mind and the heart to engage it a little bit more and allowing the Spirit to take me into what this psalm is wanting to do in me and how it brings me into prayer and relationship with God and with others. So that's something that you might want to try when you're praying the Psalms yourself, because the Psalms really are the prayer book of God's people, and they can be very formative for us, especially when they say things that don't resonate with us. Because we tend to just go to the things that do resonate with us and oh, I get that. But sometimes there's things that we need to hear that come from a different life experience and a different time that are important for us to hear and allow to shape us. And so there's a little bit of that in this psalm. Looking at the start of it, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Now you can imagine coming into this building, even Jesus' disciples, when they were on the hills outside Jerusalem and they looked down, they said, look at the beauty of this building. Look at how the stones are put together, these massive stones, and they're fit together so well. And they were stunned with the beauty of this place. And coming into it, you could see how you could get caught up in that. And then at the very central moment of your time of worship in this place, the song that you sing says, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. It's easy to look at what we have accomplished and allow that even to be part of our worship. But here in this song that is being sung, God is pulling us away from a reliance on what we do and what we are able to accomplish and saying, wait a second, I love the fact that you're working hard and that you're trying to do good stuff, but unless I am in it, it's a waste of time. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Imagine singing that in that space. And singing that with Jesus. And that can get applied, of course, to us today. We can get very focused on how to build the church and the community of God's people and all the programming and everything and the busyness that gets going on and get to the point where, you know what, we're rising up early and we're going to bed late and we're involved in all kinds of anxious toil. And there's a nervousness and an anxiousness about it. And what if we don't? What if we don't? What if we don't? And we need to come into space where we stop and we sing together, unless the Lord is building this, it's a waste of time. And we hear that this is about who God is and about what God is doing. So God says, don't be getting up at crazy early hours and working in anxious toil all day long and going to bed really late and burning yourself out in that way and being anxious about these things. Instead, remember who it is who is at work here and get in tune with that. And if we get in tune with that, there will be much healthier rhythms in our life than often what we get caught up in. So God says, here we are and we're talking about my house. Now let's talk about your house. And they sing, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. This is verse 3. The fruit of the womb, a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Now, we hear this today, and it's kind of like, oh, is that saying that we should all have a whole bunch of kids? Is that, you know, God's ideal for the family? And that's not what God is saying. Again, this is coming from an ancient time, isn't it? And at that time, your retirement plan was having kids. They were the ones who were going to look after you. And in fact, not just your retirement plan, but your plan for being secure and successful in your everyday life was having a bunch of kids. Because when you went to the gate of your village or your city, which is where business was done and where court proceedings were done and where decisions were made, you went there and you needed to be able to negotiate. You needed to be able to represent yourself. And the people who were able to come with, especially grown young men, who were able to show that this household is growing, this household is successful, this household is secure, because look at these sons who are able to defend it right now and carry it on into the future. They had a more secure standing in their society, and especially in those negotiations or those court proceedings in the gate. Things are different today. How well you do in business, how well you do in society, how well you do in a court case doesn't depend on how many kids you have nowadays. But what God is saying here, this is a symbol of security. This is a symbol of things are going well with this family and with this household. So in the same way, when you would go into the house of God, into this temple, and you would see these gorgeous and beautiful massive walls, and you would experience this sense of peace and security, God is saying, if you want that in your family life, in your own household, the way you're going to get it is not through anxious toil. The way you are going to have the kind of security that someone at this time would experience if they had a number of children who were able to function or work in responsible ways in their society and look after you and extend your household, the way you would have that kind of security is not through anxious toil. It's through recognizing who it is who's at work here. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. And we need to come back to that, a recognition that it is God who is at work here. And so if we're looking for a sense of security in our families, in our household, in our neighborhood, we need to get back to the core of where security, the only true security, can be found. And that's with the maker of heaven and earth. He goes on, or the next song goes on in a similar vein. Song 128 says, "Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel." So again, you've come into the temple, you're singing these songs, and you've centered on a song that talks about that the only way there can be true security for this house, this temple, and for your family and your household is if you are fully centered on the Lord God. He's the one who builds this. He's the one who provides the security. And then the next song reinforces that. It says, "Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it will be well with you." Those would be very good words to hear over and over and over again, wouldn't they? Especially if you're someone who is caught up in anxious toil. Because let's face it, the way our society works, it drives us, doesn't it? When are those moments where you can actually just kind of take a deep breath and go, without having worry come in about this or about that, or I need to be doing this and I need to be doing that? In fact, if we're not really, really busy, if we're not looking like we're caught up in anxious toil, people start to wonder, are they a little bit lazy? Are they concerned about their future? Are they acting responsibly? It's almost like we have to demonstrate a certain frenetic energy and worry in order to show that we're responsible people in this society. And God says, no, that's not the way. If you fear me, if you recognize who I am, that I am the sovereign Lord of all creation, and that I am engaged in this, and that it's possible to get out of the rat race and enter into a holy and a sacred space where you are aware of my presence and my reality, and you are in awe of who this person is, the sovereign God, the creator of heaven and earth. If you enter into that space and become aware of that reality, then you'll eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. Then you will be blessed, and it will be well with you. We need to hear that in our society, don't we? We need to have times that break us out of the demands that are there on our time and on our energy, that keep distracting us from what is really true. But the interesting thing is, it doesn't say you won't have to work. It doesn't say, if you fear me, I will just provide for you and everything will be good. It says, if you fear this God, if you are in awe of this God and in recognition of his presence, his transforming presence in your life and in this world, then you will eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. Then you will be involved in productive and life-giving work. You will be involved in work that matters and that is important. And you will be able to eat the fruit of the labor of those hands, of that work. And you will be blessed, and it will be well with you. And again, in those days, the ultimate symbol of a blessed life, of a life that was well lived, was a healthy family. Not just the immediate family, mom, dad, and kids. It was a household, a growing household. There were servants in that household. There was extended family. There might be grandparents. There might be uncles and aunts or cousins. And it was this extended household, this extended family. And the desire, as people are here in the temple and they're having their life reoriented around God again, the desire was, of course, that it would go well with their families. And so here we have symbols of a life, a family life well lived in that day. And it says, your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. There will be children in this family. It will be healthy, and things will go well with your wife and with your kids. And then it moves into this desire for blessing. The Lord bless you from Zion. The Lord bless you from Zion. Now again, today, sometimes, and I've seen this a lot in some Christian contexts, it's almost like if you're a young or any adult and you're not married and you're not having kids, there's almost this sense of, oh, is there something wrong there? And in the new temple, in the community that God is building, it's not just about the nuclear family. I believe that the sacred space that God is building today, this temple that God is building today of a community of people that follow Jesus, and it's different than everything else that's around, we need single people in that community. It's not just married people, and blessing isn't just about what happens with family. Realities today are not everyone is going to experience a marital relationship. Not everyone is going to experience what it's like to raise kids. Not everyone who does raise kids is going to have a healthy experience with that. Not everything turns out well, does it? And so what God wants to do is create a community where within that community, everyone experiences what it's like to live life well and to have this blessing from God. And so what we have in this song is it does talk about a blessing that's focused on family, but then it moves on and it says, the Lord bless you from Zion. And so you're singing a song that focuses on blessing and well-wishing, that people would be able to live well and experience the goodness that God has to offer them. And may you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Of course, Jerusalem was the center of life for these people. It was the city on the hill. And now today, translating it into our day, maybe this is saying, may you see the prosperity of the city on the hill that is the community of God's people. May we actually see God's people living well and thriving, whether they're married, whether they're kids, whether they're husband, wife, whether they're single, whether they struggle with physical issues or any kind of illness. May all of God's people be coming together, and may they experience the blessing of God, and may they thrive. May there be a fullness of life in this city on a hill. And that's the song that people would sing three times a year when they came together. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. Peace be upon the people of God. Shalom be upon the people of God. Not just an absence of conflict, but shalom in that sense of a fullness of life. Every aspect of life being lived to its full and flourishing. That's what they would sing on a regular basis. We need to sing that, don't we? Sometimes in our walk with Jesus, we get very focused just on kind of our individual spirituality. But what God is doing is a bigger picture. It's a bigger mission. He's pulling together a community of people. He's changing our lives individually, absolutely, but he's creating a people that live differently than what you experience in the world around you and have a different experience, because at the very center is the living God, is the resurrected Jesus, and is the outpoured Spirit. And that changes us. For us to taste that, we need to have times when we move into sacred space together, and where we sing songs like this and are reminded of the bigger picture of what God is doing. Here's the thing, though. This song is really, really positive. And it's saying, you know, when you trust in God, when you are in awe of this God, life will be good for you. Life will flourish for you. You will do well and you will live well. And you can imagine singing that, and you're in this space, and then as you're singing it, you go, yeah, but. And some of the concerns from back home start to come into your mind. And some of the dissonance between this kind of ideal picture and the reality of everyday life start to come back into mind. And sometimes what happens for us as Christians is when we experience that, we kind of go, well, let's put that out of our mind. And let's keep the mask on that everything's good, because it's supposed to be good. The thing I love about these songs is they don't do that. So you've got this song that is very ideal, and they sing it, and then the very next song, Psalm 129 says this in the first line, "Greatly have they afflicted me from my youth." These people experienced negative stuff, and they experienced affliction from other people, and that's not denied. In sacred space, there needs to be space for us to be real and be honest. We can sing, "Oh, the Lord bless you. Peace be upon Jerusalem. Peace be upon his people. And if you're in awe of God, everything will go well for you." But we also need to be able to sing, "It's not going well for us right now." And in fact, the great thing about this song is it doesn't just say that. Listen to what it says. "Greatly have they afflicted me from my youth. Let Israel now say." And they repeat it, "Greatly have they afflicted me from my youth." It's almost as if in those times when things were going well for Israel, and they were able to sing Psalm 128 with the fullness, you know, just belt it out, because things are going great for us right now, and isn't it great to be a follower of this God? And then the next song says, "Wait a second, let Israel now sing, let Israel now say." It's not always like that. There are times when things do not go well. So let's sing this song together now. "Greatly have they afflicted me from my youth, yet they have not prevailed against me. The plowers plowed upon my back. They made long their furrows. The Lord is righteous. He has cut the cords of the wicked. May all who hate Zion be put to shame and turned backward. Let them be like the grass on the housetops, which withers before it grows up, with which the reaper does not fill his hand, nor the binder of sheaves in his arms. Nor do those who pass by say, 'The blessing of the Lord be upon you. We bless you in the name of the Lord.'" That's not a very positive psalm, is it? That's not one of those songs that you would sing and go, ooh, I feel really uplifted and encouraged right now. It's reminding me that things go really, really wrong in life. Like really wrong. Like this imagery of the plowers plowed upon my back. They made long their furrows. That's the image of somebody being horribly whipped with these cords that tear the flesh from your back. The kind of thing that people sometimes don't survive from. Humiliating and incredibly painful. Horrible injustice. And that's the image they sing about. And then the very next line says, the Lord is righteous, though. The Lord is righteous, and he has cut the cords of the wicked. So you've got this tension of injustice happening and suffering happening because of the evil in the world and the evil actions of others. And yet in the midst of it, this faith that the Lord is just, and he has in the past stopped injustice, and he will stop injustice again, and we might actually get to experience that in our personal situation. And then goes on and says, those who are unjust, those who are oppressing others, those who are exploiting others, and those who are doing that to us, may they be put to shame and turned backward. Let them be like the grass on the housetops. Like it's this almost like this vengeance thing. May they be shamed now. May they become nothing. May they be like grass that just withers away. And that's an awkward song for us to sing, right? Like we're not supposed to wish evil on others. And yet, we often experience things that makes us feel, I wish something not so good would happen to that person, right? And what I love about Scripture and about these Psalms is they allow us to be honest about that. In fact, they don't just allow us to, they call us out to be honest. It says, let Israel now say. Let us sing this together. Lord, we've experienced something and it's not right, and here's what we're feeling. I wish this would happen to that person. And when we can articulate it and sing it, we can then leave it in the hands of God. And we don't have to act on it. We leave it in the hands of God, and it sets us free. It sets us free because we are not to be people who do that to others. We're to be people who rely on God. And it's God who is building this house. It's God who cuts the cords of the wicked. It's God who sees the injustice that is done. He sees what's going wrong in your life. We can express that to him. We can leave it with him. And then we can be free of it. Even if it's still ongoing, we know it's in his hands. And we know he has stopped injustice in the past. And we know he will in again. He will do it again. And we see it in Jesus, don't we? Because Jesus suffered the ultimate injustice. This very thing happened to his back, and then he was nailed to that cross. And he called out, my God, why have you forsaken me? But God did not leave him in the grave. Jesus was raised again, and injustice was set right. And newness of life was opened up for us, and sacred space was created, and a door was opened that we could walk into space that is safe and secure. It's the same space that the resurrected Jesus is in right now. And we can step into that. But to do so, we need to leave these things in God's hands. Leave them with him. The last song that we'll look at this morning, Psalm 130. Again, here you are, and you're in this time of worship and closeness with God and with his people. And the thing is, when you're in this sacred space, you can't be there very long without becoming incredibly aware of how far short we fall in terms of who the kind of people we need to be and the kind of people God desires us to be. Psalm 130 says, out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my pleas for mercy, for favor. If you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, that you may be feared. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits. And in his word, I hope. My soul waits for the Lord. More than watchmen for the morning. More than watchmen for the morning. O Israel, hope in the Lord. For with the Lord, there is steadfast love. and with him is plentiful redemption, and he will redeem Israel from all his iniquities. Out of the depths I cry to you. When we're in that space, when we're aware of the presence of God, and we sense peace and security and restoration, we become very aware of who we are, don't we? And what is wrong inside of us. We become aware of how we have acted in the previous week, the things we've done, the things we've said, the things we've thought. And we stand naked before God. And that's not a comfortable place to be. But out of the depths, we cry. We cry to this God, and we say, let your ears be attentive. And Lord, if you were one to mark iniquities, if you were one to stand there and have that scorecard saying, you did this, you did that, you thought this, you felt this, you are like this. If you were someone with that scorecard, who could stand here in this space? None of us could. But that's not what you are like. That's not what this God is like. This God instead is a God of steadfast love. That the Hebrew word is chesed. It's this steadfast, this loyalty, this loving loyalty that God has for his people. And he will never forsake them. And he doesn't stand there with the scorecard going, oh, you did one thing too much and now you're done. Instead, he welcomes people into his presence, and he is there to redeem and to forgive. And so the people, they sing, we are waiting for your voice. We want to hear you. With you there is forgiveness, that you may be feared. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits more than watchmen for the morning. You know, it's strange. This past summer, I was on a canoe trip, and three canoe trips, actually. And a couple of times, I woke up in the middle of the night, and for some reason, I thought, you know how sometimes you think about, I wonder if there's a bear. And so that's one bit of insecurity. But for some reason, I started thinking about what it would have been like back in the day when it wasn't just bears you were worried about when you were back there. It was people. Like, you never knew when another hunting party or you know, it could be a hunting party, or it could have been a military group. It could have just been another village down the road, or not down the road, but a few lakes over. They might decide they were going to come and they were going to take stuff from you, or they were going to attack you. And when you're in a tent in the middle of the woods and you start thinking about what it would be like for someone to actually come and attack you, you're really vulnerable, right? You can't see, you can hear, but everything's magnified, and like, there's no protection, right? And so if someone did want to come when you're in a tent in the middle of the woods and do something to you, what are you going to do? And I let my mind go that way, and I found myself seriously waiting for the morning. It's like, please, I could use morning like really, really soon. And I let myself go into that space. And you can imagine watchmen in the day where their responsibility is to protect this city and this people. They need to be alert, and they're watching. Their ears are like listening, and their eyes are looking, and they're like, and there's this tension, when is the morning going to come? And that's what this song says, that the people are like this, that they're aware of how, of the dirt in themselves. They're aware of how wrong they are. They're aware of how far short they fall. And they're longing to hear and be confident in that forgiveness from God. And they sing this song together. They wait for God, for God's movement, for God's presence, and they sing this song together. And at the center of that song, it says, with you, there is forgiveness. With you, there is forgiveness. And if we don't hear anything else from these songs this morning, I want us to go out hearing that. Because all of us have things for which we need to hear forgiveness. We need to be forgiven. And all of us have things for which we need to extend forgiveness. We live in a world where every single day stuff happens that needs to be forgiven. It needs to be released. And at the very center of this sacred space is a God who forgives. And actually, this city on the hill is built on forgiveness. Because when that forgiveness gets extended, particularly because of the death and resurrection of Jesus, when that forgiveness gets extended, relationships are restored. People are restored. Dignity is restored. Peace settles in. And how much more secure can we be than in relationships where we know we are forgiven? And we know we will be forgiven. And we know we will forgive. It doesn't get any more secure than that. It doesn't get any more alive than that. To be in relationships where the very center of it is forgiveness. And that forgiveness is made possible because Jesus' death on the cross, when he was on that cross, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do." And that cycle of hurting each other and then paying back and then paying back again and paying back again, that stops in Jesus. And in the resurrection of Jesus, this new reality, this sacred space opens up that is characterized at its very core by forgiveness. And so with this song, this is what I want us to be able to leave with today, that we know that at the center of this sacred space is a God who is passionately committed to us and loyal to us and forgives. And because of that, that can change us, changes our relationships with each other, changes our relationships with him. And as we walk out these doors today, having experienced some sacred space together, think about what it would be like in our community if we extend just forgiveness. Think about the change that would make. Think about how that would be a city on a hill where people would go, "Oh my goodness, did you hear what that person did? And then did you hear how they responded?" That would be a pregnant moment, wouldn't it, for conversation as to what's most important in this life. That would be a hopeful moment. What I'd like to do in closing, as our closing prayer, is actually show a video. I wasn't going to do it because I've already gone over 5 minutes, but I've been planning to do this twice already. But I want to show a video because this is a video. It's a song that was written by people from several different churches in Hamilton that have been experiencing some of this sacred space together. And they've been trying to build a stronger sense of community together. And at the core of it is listening to each other and forgiving. It's called City on a Hill. It's by a group called City Harmonic. And hopefully you'll see some of the imagery in it and how this can be inspiring for us as we try to be part of building this city on a hill and extending sacred space into the world around us. So this will be our closing prayer.